It's August, and Two Peas in a Podcast are just over halfway through the year.
Yes, well, we did the July podcast last time, so now we're into August. That's actually the last month of winter, and as we mentioned last time, the actual calendar that we're using is sort of a European calendar. It's not really quite as accurate as the Aboriginal calendar. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. So I've actually got the information you gave me, and I've been looking at that a bit and really kind of trying to tie some of my gardening to that. It has also been quite possibly one of the coldest winters I've remembered, and I am, being Dutch, a huge fan of the cold. I love being cold. And as someone at work said to me the other day, Michelle, if you're cold, the rest of us are near dead. So I'm wearing jumpers with big cardigans, and it has been a really cold winter. And I think that certainly affected how things are growing. But I've liked it. I like the cold.
Well, to me, it's a matter of how far behind I'm running, you know. I mean, I'm running a fair bit behind in that I've got a lot of weeds in my garden, but I'm also getting them down, you see. And the good thing when you start to get the weeds down is you start to feed your chook and you start to feed your compost, and so you start to feel like a winner. So it's funny, every season different. I am running behind, but now I'm catching up rather well, because when it's this cold, there's not much to do, really, isn't it? You've got to advise gardeners and starters of gardeners that this is a time you can do nothing in the garden, really. I mean, we're going to tell you plenty of things to do. But, in fact, if you wanted to take time off, there's watering and there's slow growth, and you don't really have to do much because everything's slowly growing and everything's getting watered.
It's also, though, quite possibly, which is an important task that I do in the garden, it has to be done probably around about 5:30 in the evening. You put your gumboots on, you put your beanie on, and you have your glass of mulled wine, and you walk around the garden being impressed with yourself. Even the chooks, my chooks are doing a little bit of laying. They do slow down the laying a bit, but if you give them a really warm environment, I am finding if you're up the hay and the straw, they will still lay a bit. The native plant of the month we're going to be talking about at the moment is Muntrees, Kunzea ponifera. Sounds a bit fancy, but I love the name Muntrees. And I was particularly excited the other day. So Muntrees are an indigenous plant. They're a ground cover. They spread, which is fantastic. So it's a really good, almost like a weed mat. It's really pretty. It sits very low.
Yep.
Beautiful, bright green leaves. And mostly it's used, well, it is used for its berries. They can be added to salad, but most people would probably be a bit more familiar with it as jam.
Yep.
But you can add it into cooking. And what I'm excited about is, as you were saying, you know, winter, you're not doing much. You're just kind of pulling up a little bit of weeds and stuff. And I pulled up a little bit of a patch of weeds, glass of wine in one hand, pulling up some weeds to give to the chooks, because just as an aside, don't forget to give your chooks heaps of greenery during winter. We do tend to forget a little bit, but they need a bit more. And as I cleared it, there is the Muntree bush that I had planted probably about 6 months ago and haven't bothered to look at again. And it has gone great guns, even with these weeds kind of shadowing it out. So I pulled them away, and I look, honestly, it must be about 80 by 80 centimetres, which is pretty good seeing as I planted it as a tiny little tube stock.
I totally believe you, because I've been doing that to a lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
Like my sweet peas were snowed under, and my cabbages were snowed under, and my other peas, my climbing peas, which are the snow peas and the sugar snap, and the sweet peas are all bloody snowed under, and I pulled them all out from their grass entrapment. And you do feel good about doing that, and you know they're going to really get a go on now.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, with regards to chooks and feeding, I got to inform you, Michelle, you're a bit tough on your chooks. If you don't feed them warm molasses.
Oh, now, no, I agree.
I put warm molasses in my Brandon Pollard.
Yeah.
And they don't appreciate it.
No.
Well, because I'm so overfed, really.
Oh, okay. See, your chooks are treated much nicer. My chooks, they're quite thrilled when I remember to feed them on the second day kind of chooks. They unfortunately have to toughen up.
Do you give them water occasionally?
Oh, sometimes. You okay. I'm quite good with the water. Funnily enough, that's the one thing I get really like. Oh, my gosh, the poor things. I've only got two because that's about all I can manage at the moment and a couple of ducks.
You've had an exciting history of chooks. But I've actually got 10 at present and they are beautiful girls and... Actually, a lot better off about the rooster, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Anyway, aren't we all, Trevor? Aren't we all?
No, we're not. I often feel sorry for the men.
Well, my Drake is walking around at the moment because, sadly, we think a fox got into the yard and took the female duck, which was just devastating. Even my daughter-in-law, who doesn't like ducks, is feeling dreadfully sorry for this poor Drake who is just pottering around the yard, not sure what to do with itself. But
yes, I have lost things to foxes too. It's amazing that there are urban foxes around. However, on our way to the end of this podcast, I have to do the flower of the month. I've done Muntries,
which is... So I guess I really want to encourage people, put in Muntries where you really want a thick, flat weed matting. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is a good one for that.
It still requires a little bit, but you can kind of get the whippersnipper when it gets... When you're finished with the berries.
You've got a whippersnipper?
I have got a whippersnipper. It's my son's, but he doesn't know that I've kept it in the shed. And then you just kind of roughly run over it. A lot of people, it's a bit of a fallacy where people think that indigenous plants or native plants don't require prune back, but they absolutely do. And if you don't want to eat the berries, don't eat the berries. Trust me, the birds and the bees will love them. And that's a good enough reason to plant Muntries. What's your flower of the month, Trevor?
Wallflowers. Now, surprisingly, I found a real name for them.
Yes.
Which is Ellisimum cheri or Charanthus.
Oh.
Now, I found this by, you know, on your phone, you've got this little strip across your phone that starts out with Google and then it's got a microphone and a camera.
I know.
If you photograph it with a camera, that will tell you what you're photographing. So I've found that Latin name from photographing him. Charanthus is probably as good a name as any, because the other one's
unpronounceable. Well, the word wallflower's got a bit of negative connotation. So, you know, if you went to a dance in the old days, I'm not old enough to know this, but my mother used to say, and Trevor will be able to tell you, lies, Trevor, you silver fox, you... that no girl wanted to be a wallflower. But I would love to be a wallflower because you've got the most beautiful wallflowers growing in your garden and they're gorgeous.
Yeah, well, they're hardy too. I mean, they are the flower of the month because once you got them established, and it doesn't take a lot to get them established, they are very strong indeed. They're like a low shrub. And they got these beautiful multicoloured flowers. You'll soon get to know them because I never knew them before last year. And they actually have started flowering now, and unbelievably, they'll flower into autumn, as long as you deadhead them. So they're a six-month flower.
Which is lovely.
Which is incredible, and they have a beautiful scent, so you can use them in essential oils and stuff. So that is our native and introduced flower of the month. I was going to say that, okay, you're lazy, appreciated, you're doing nothing, well understood. I'm a bit like that myself, but...
Lie, he works very hard.
But there is a way of working in winter without getting cold and wet and damp and miserable. And
is that sitting in front of the fire? No.
in the hothouse. Now, most of the action in gardening, no matter where you are in the world, in wintertime, most of the action takes place in the hothouse. Now, it can be a pyramid of plastic stretched over the top of a frame, or it can be what they call a cold frame, which is a window on top of straw bales, and it can be anything, but you need to get that northern sunlight into over glass and into your plants because that's where the heat is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're doing that now with our tomatoes, but there's a lot of stuff that you can plant now early. You're taking the risk, and it is the exciting part of gardening, actually, early crops. are exciting, and corn, eggplant, sunflowers, capsicum, cucumber, tomatoes, zucchini, they can all be put in little pots now under glass, and they will all be planted out early. So you'll be out there in September, the frost would have just finished, and you'll be putting these plants in. It's highly risky, but it's also highly profitable because you'll be the first ones with them.
And also, it's quite often what ends up happening with plants is that people go, oh, look, it's tomato season, I'm going to plant my tomatoes, and it's all a little bit late. And the other thing is the cost saving. No disrespect, but seedlings are what? $5 a punnet, which we are not saying not to go and purchase seedlings. However, if you've got some seeds that you can put now, you will save a fortune.
Yeah, and these are all good. I mean, last year I actually put zucchini in almost by mistake, and they grew, and I didn't know why, but they grew bigger and bigger, so I planted them out early. And they grew into the most magnificent, highly productive, productive plant you've ever seen.
You had fantastic ones.
You can have good luck.
Yeah, no, you had fantastic ones. Yeah, and zucchinis, tomatoes, cucumbers, capsicum. Look, you can never have too many sunflowers. What joy. Corn, you can never have too many corn. Eggplant. And the thing is, like, eggplant. Oh, look, eggplant, you're glut of eggplants. You chuck them in the oven, just stab them a few times, throw them in the oven. When they're all kind of collapsed in on themselves, you can do a couple of things. You can scoop them out, chuck them in the blender, tahini, lemon juice, tons of garlic, olive oil.
Because the skin's a bit tough.
Yeah, the skin's a bit tough. Or what you can also do is slice them up with the skin. So the first one, you blend it. You got the traditional baba ganoush or eggplant dip. So good. So good you want to slather it on your Weet-Bix in the morning. But the other one is you just chuck them in the oven, prick them all, let them collapse a little bit, you know, until they're really roasted, cool down, slice them with the skin. Now, I like the skin. Some people don't. Pack them tight in some sterilized glass jars, tons of garlic. Also, you can do it with the capsicum. So last year I had a whole pile of capsicum and some eggplant. Just put a tray of it in the oven, let them all really kind of almost char, almost a little bit over roast. Yeah. Well. Then I slice them really thinly, pack them in sterilized jars, just you save jars, please. Don't go out and buy stuff. We're trying to, you know, save the planet a little bit here. Yeah. Good olive oil. Don't use cheap olive oil. Good olive oil.
Yeah.
Tons of garlic. I actually threw a few little chilies in there.
Yeah.
I got some chilies at the Gawler Community House.
Right.
Screw the lid on tight. Really, really packed tight. Absolutely fantastic.
They're pretty beautiful. Concentrated though.
Fabulous. And it's like almost like a bit of an antipasto thing.
Yeah.
So I used it for a couple of things. I had a pasta bake one night. Empty a bit of that and onto there because it's all sort of sat there. Yeah, so, and you want to get ready for that. You want to get ready for having all these amazing things you can be cooking with your produce, but you need to start thinking about it now.
It's quite pleasant now because it actually outside is freaking cold. So there are crops you can actually put in. I think you have to put in seedlings rather than seed. Celery is an interesting crop. In Gawler, celery is a winter crop. It's too hot for it in summer. But if you want to go down to the local nursery and buy some seedlings, you can put them in now. It's ridiculously water-loving. It's almost a swamp plant, celery.
Yeah, it's true.
And the likelihood is that you're not going to be able to grow it like you buy. Stuff they buy has been really fed intravenously with water, but the stuff you grow will probably be more flavoursome per square centimetre than the stuff that you buy. And I find that the celery you grow, although it's not as good in salads, is actually better in soups and stews because it's more powerful in its flavouring. Now, celery...
Can I also say too, Trevor, use the whole plant. I've watched people lob off the top those beautiful leaves. Jeez, that's where all the flavour is. Yeah. And then they lob off the end. Clean the end. Obviously, that's where your dirt is. But clean it, because sometimes I do find celery can get a lot of dirt in it. Scrub that. You should not be throwing anything out other than the occasional bug that lands on it. Scrub it up and you put your leaves, the top leaves, and you put your stalk, the bottom bit, slice it thinly, put that in a soup because that's where your flavours are. And the middle bit, you know what you do with the middle bit, Trevor? You slather it with peanut butter, and that is the best damn snack you're ever going to have in your life.
Yeah, well, I mean, all these things are beautiful because they're fresh. So you get fresh celery, and it's good for flavour, and it is good for snacking. But I got to admit, the stuff they sell in the shops is it's a bit more crispy, it's a bit more watery, it's a bit lighter. So you still got to go and buy it from the shop. The other thing you can plant now is asparagus. Once again, it's a bit late, like the celery. I'm giving you advice that's a little bit old, but if you want to start a celery patch, the best houses have an asparagus patch. So if you want to start an asparagus patch, the way you do it is by buying year-old crowns and putting them in very organic soil. You dig a trench about 200 millimetres or 8 inches deep, and then you put a bit of a pyramid in the centre. And when you buy asparagus one-year-old crowns, they'll have these long roots and a crown in the middle of them. Well, you sit the crown on the pyramid of soil that you made in the 200 millimetre deep trench. You spread the roots out and then you backfill. That way the crown will remain above the ground level and your roots will be well and truly established. You give it water. Asparagus is quite tough. It does need the organics. It loves the organics, but the thing about asparagus is it lasts for 20 years. So,
and I want to really encourage people to get a bit brave with asparagus. I always thought it was going to be this very delicate thing that I grew. And I had some raised garden beds and I planted the asparagus, which you grow asparagus. You'll never eat it from the shop again. My God, it's fantastic. The leaves, even on the top, I just chop them up through a salad. But then I move the garden beds and I've got the asparagus coming up through the lawn that I've left and I'm still just chopping it off. It is, you're right, you've got it forever and it's really hardy and it's fantastic.
It is. It is very luxurious. You feel as though you belong to the upper class when you start chopping off the asparagus sprouts and just eating them. You need them raw, actually. You don't really have to cook with them. So they are a beautiful thing, but they're perennial, so you can't really plant them with your rotational crops. That permanent crop, globe artichokes and like strawberries, they've got to be aside from it. This is the time to plant them. They like it slightly alkaline, surprisingly. So if 7 is neutral, they like it between 6.5 and 7.5, so that's pretty neutral, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay, so the other thing is, now this is actually probably a men's section because because it's about easy cooking plants.
Jamie Oliver would disagree.
Well, actually, most women would disagree. My two favourite crops really are spuds and corn.
Yeah.
Now, it is because in my younger days I wasn't much of a cook. And
I find that very hard to believe, Trevor.
Well, not really. When you look at spuds, I mean, spuds are an easy crop to grow. They're actually not sexual reproduction, they're vegetative reproduction. So spuds you simply put in the ground, you bury them 200 mil, and then you pile up another 200 mil on top of them, so they're 400 mil in the ground, and they will disappear for 2 months. You might think you haven't done anything and they're not successful, but leave it be, put more straw and mulch on top of it to keep the weeds down, and these small shoots will come through. Now, you're after small shoots, you're not after a lot of greenery.
No.
Because you're after the tubers. And after a few months, when they start to flower, they have tiny white flowers, but keep a lookout because you as a gardener are an observer, so you should see the white flowers. And after that, about a month after that, it is possible to go around the outside of the mounds where you put these spuds and take out the small spuds, and it's called bandicooting, and those small spuds are so integral with their skin, you won't even know they've got a skin.
Oh, no, fabulous. Scrub them and then...
Yeah.
And actually, when I've grown spuds, so the spuds I'm growing at the moment, I'm just putting the chook hay on top of them kind of thing, which has been fantastic. But I know in the past when I've grown spuds and just put hay on top of them.
Yeah.
You pick them and they're not even dirty. So if you're a bit lazy like me. But, you know, I remember as a kid my mum would have the little nail brush.
Yeah.
And you didn't peel the spuds, you'd scrub them.
No, you don't peel them because the goodness and everything. Yeah. The taste and the goodness in the skin. So you definitely don't peel them. You don't have to boil them as long as these old spuds that you buy because they're nothing like a doughy. They're much more hardy. They're really quite crisp by comparison to the doughy stuff that you buy. Everything seems to turn to starch after a while. So these guys come out as very hard flesh but very easy to cook. So it does only takes half the time of a normal spud to cook. And when it goes into your mouth, it's sort of crunchy still and it's got no starch on it. And that's the same with corn too. The reason that they're my favourite crop is that they're nothing like what you buy in the shop. They're entirely crunchier and entirely fresher than what you buy in the shops. And everybody knows it now.
But Trevor and I shocked Trevor prior to the podcast because I suggested that char grilling corn. Look, he's horrified now as I'm saying it out loud. Char grilling corn. He's like, no! Char grilling corn on a barbecue or over the top of a bit of a fire pit. I'm a bit of a fan of a fire pit at the moment. Is better than boiling them. But Trevor's like, no. I like that little, you know, when it's almost like a bit of popcorn with butter and salt on it. We should do that with my fire pit in a few months' time when we've got crops in. Let's do that. Let's have a corn off.
Yeah, well, we could. It is true that the barbecue does grill them lovely and it does get extra flavour because of the smokiness and the burntness and so forth. But it's very hard to beat. With corn, if you boil your water first and go out and pick them and you throw them in after you peel off the leaves, that's the only way I eat corn because there's no skin on it.
Yeah.
You know how you usually get skin between your teeth?
Yeah, I hate that.
You don't get it with the really 5 minute old stuff. And so, yeah, they're very easy to cook, and that's probably why I call them men's crops, because you don't have to do much.
You know what I love about corn?
What?
You can sit down to about 3 ears of corn and go, and that's dinner.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's dinner. Thank you very much.
The other thing people don't realise about corn is that they see great big crops of it, but you can fit it in a small space.
Yeah.
So you need at least 16, but 16 plants will fit in a square formation with one plant in each corner, and it'll only be 3 foot by 3 foot, 900 mil by 900 mil. So the reason you plant them in square is that they're entirely dependent upon the tassels on top being the male part and the silks on top of the cobs being the female part. They're entirely dependent upon self-pollination and they have to be in a tight little bunch.
Yeah.
They can't be in a long singular row because they won't germinate. So plant them in a box in a square shape. 900 by 900 gets you 16 plants with every plant at 300 millimetre centre. So currently in your hothouse you should have at least 16 corn and you will plant them 300 mil apart. You can get 25 corn in a 1200 by 1200 space, and you can get 36 corn in a 1500 by 1500 millimeter space. So that you can get a lot of value in a very small space because most corn they actually need superb soil.
Yeah.
So have you got your corn in the hothouse at present, and you've got 36 of them, you're going to have to go outside sometime, I'm afraid, and add fertiliser to the point where you're going to plant them. But there's not a very big spot, so.
And 36 corn should be just enough for a one-person household. If that one person is me.
I was thinking that.
If that one person is me, because I would quite happily eat homegrown corn every night. I remember one year having a particularly prolific batch of corn and just literally going out in the evening and just eating it as I came in. Yeah. I didn't even cook it.
You can't eat it raw.
Didn't even cook it, which was great. It's
beautiful. So,
yeah.
So corn doesn't happen very often in the year, but if you're growing it in your hothouse now, you're in for a treat. So they are probably the crops that you should be thinking about now. I've got cabbage growing and they're looking quite good. I got Savoy cabbage. You might think that there's not much you can do with cabbage because it has a bad reputation, but it does make a beautiful coleslaw. So if you've got apple and celery and you've got a kitchen whiz, You can chop up the cabbage, celery and apple and make a beautiful coleslaw out of it with a bit of mayonnaise.
Trevor, haven't you been watching the news? All the fast food places, because lettuce is so expensive, are using cabbage instead of lettuce. Cabbage is so maligned. And I think it's maligned because people boil the living bejesus out of it. And I've got to say, one of my favourite, well, two of my favourite dishes, my mum does the most beautiful, and whenever I ask her to make it, she gets cranky with me, but because it's quite fiddly, but it's fabulous, is cabbage rolls. So she'll make cabbage rolls, she'll make cabbage rolls for me. Absolutely divine. But the other one is, you're cutting up your savoy, you're frying it up with a whole bunch of garlic, olive oil, a little bit of butter to just kind of mix it in, bring it down, okay, a bit more butter, bring it down. If you're a bacon eater, throw bacon through it. If you're not a bacon eater, just chuck a whole bunch of beautiful spices and just eat it. It's just, cabbage is really maligned.
Yeah, well, actually, I think you Dutch and Europeans are a bit fond of cabbage.
We are fond of cabbage.
I do think it actually is all right with peanut sauce.
Yes! Oh,
so
my
it's
gosh.
Not entirely disadvantaged. I mean, you can plant broad beans now and chard and spinach. They're allowable now, so you're not out of the woods entirely. If you've got a bit of spare land, well, then plant them.
I've thrown some more in. Broad beans, spinach, chard. And one of the reasons I plant so much spinach and chard is, A, it makes me feel like I'm a half-decent gardener because it grows to the bilio. Blanch it, chuck it in a plastic bag, put it in the freezer, and you've got it all year round. And thirdly, throw it to the chooks. Chop it and throw it to the chooks.
Okay, I think we've probably gone far enough today. I did actually have an interesting... Have we got time?
No, we've got time to talk about this bouquet garni. I want to talk about this.
Well, I was just looking, I'm probably looking on YouTube.
Your purple bearded iris. My backyard, I reckon I must have, I'm not exaggerating, 200 flowers of these. For some reason...
Are they coming out now?
It's exquisite. It's just like I looked at it, I'm like, God... I've turned the corner into Monet's garden. It's just actually, I had to, unfortunately, have a huge tree removed. But removing the tree has allowed a lot more light into my backyard. So a lot of the irises that I had planted that I didn't realise had... So the purple bearded irises are growing fabulous. But the bouquet garni, talk about this, because I'm actually going to go and do this.
Well, I just looked into it and I came upon this, how to make a bouquet garni, and I had heard of it. It's parsley, tarragon, French tarragon, fennel and lemon balm. You tie the leaves together and you add it to your cooking liquid. Now, when you think about it, that applies to a lot of things, but it's actually meant to apply to fish. But even so, if you're cooking something in cooking liquid and you tie the leaves of parsley, tarragon, fennel and lemon balm together, or actually put them inside of a bit of a muslin bag or something, that will add a lot of flavour to your cooking, won't it?
I remember my mum having bouquet garni, but she had bay leaves. And I'm going to actually ring her and ask her what she put in it, because I remember she'd tie it together with the little white cooking string, you know, that you used to wrap up meat, and she'd have that simmering away in the silver side.
Whoa.
Oh, I know, and with the fish, and that was all from the garden, and it was, I think it's why I loved bay leaves.
Yeah.
I remember, and they'd be drying in the kitchen. I loved it. It was, you know, this gorgeous sort of smell. But I'm going to actually try that. Next month, I'm going to let you know, Trevor, if I
found
that successful. It's just beautiful because I love parsley tarragon. Mm. I've got that much tarragon. When you plant tarragon, you've never not got tarragon. Fennel. We all know how much I love fennel.
Yeah.
And lemon balm is another fantastic one that just goes berserk. And it's just beautiful. Just walk all over it and smash it up.
Okay.
All right. What are we going to talk about next month, Trevor?
Well, we did pretty well. I think next month might well be... I mean, autumn is the time for planting spuds.
Yeah.
But after autumn comes September and there's basically everything gets planted.
I know, that's when we're busy. The wisteria comes out. That's what I always think of September as wisteria. We'll have another native plant, which will be absolutely fabulous. Now, September, we have still got about 5 boxes. So we have 20 boxes of the tomatoes that we're fundraising. We've only got 5 left. So 5 heirloom tomatoes, for $20. If you want them, please go on the Facebook page and put in a DM to Lisa. We've already sold 15. Black Creme, Roma,
Brandy
Tigerilla,
wine.
Brandy Wine, and...
Amish Face.
And we always, it's always one I forget.
Yeah, we would have.
Amish Face. And look, if last year was anything to go by, they're absolutely fantastic. And all of the people who ordered last year have ordered again. So we've got 5 left. All right, August. We're done, and I guess September, that's the gardener's favourite month, isn't it?
Well, we'll be preparing for it because you're growing a lot of stuff in readiness for the busiest season of the year.
I might take long service leave, just take a week or two off. All right, thank you very much, Trevor.
Thank you very much, Michelle.